What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, today, man?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. So we got a lot to talk about. It's been a while since we first podcasted, and we have. I guess we could start with the biggest news, but I feel like we can't ignore what happened in Houston this past week. Hurricane Harvey was pretty devastating to our city, and I say our city very literally. I think we take great ownership in this city. You know, all of us have roots there. I live in the Sugar Land area. It was hit pretty hard. Houston in general was hit harder than many expected, even though we expected a lot of rainfall. It was pretty jarring to see the images, you know, of the entire city underwater. Some calling it the storm, the flood of the century, which was, it was incredible. It was really, really bad here. I mean, thousands of people were displaced from their homes. Shelters were set up across the city. People were going around on boats rescuing people, which was insane. Like, that's how deep the water got. And like, well, and first of all, that's incredibly generous of you to go around with the boat. It really showed the brighter side of Houston. We didn't need this storm to tell us how awesome Houstonians are, but I mean, it pretty much confirmed it. I mean, the generosity of the people here, whether you were impacted or you weren't, I mean, everybody wanted to lend a helping hand. The sheer donations from both local celebrities and outside celebrities was insane. It made you feel good. It made you restore your faith in humanity a little bit.
Yeah, the there being a problem of too many volunteers was probably the most poignant moment of the whole thing to me.
Yeah. Shelters were actually sending back volunteers because there was too many people that were, you know, ready and able to, to lend a hand. And you know, that just shows the character of the city. I mean, this city is very much a love thy neighbor city. I mean, everybody wanted to help out, especially those that weren't impacted, because we felt like I was somebody who wasn't impacted at all, even though a lot of parts of my area were hit pretty bad. Like, there was a lot of street flooding just not too far from my neighborhood. I only had like a leaky roof, but I mean, that's pretty much it. People like me were kind of sitting on their hands wanting to help, right? And you're kind of like, you feel helpless. Like, you have survivor's remorse. Like, you're watching this and you're seeing the images and, like, you know, you want to do everything you can. And it was just tough. It was tough to watch your city go through that. It was encouraging to see so many people wanting to lend a hand. J.J. Watt raised over $20 million, which is insane. Like, however you feel about the guy, I don't care how you feel about J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, that's incredible. That's incredibly generous. I mean, and, like, going around Houston with truckloads of supplies, spending that money, giving it directly to the people of Houston was, it felt good. It felt good to see celebrities like, James Harden, Alex Bregman, whoever the athlete may be, just give donations, spend time at shelters, and even like Nuzzy Alexander, $10 million. I mean, that's incredibly generous, man, to give to Harvey relief efforts. And you know, other owners in the city were also pretty generous with their time and money. Jim Crane donated $4 million, and I believe the Texas owner Bob McNair donated $1 million. I mean, everybody wanted to help a hand. Everybody felt that civic duty to help out their community, and that felt good. But I mean, it's going to be a drop in the bucket for what's going to be a really long recovery process for the city. Some areas of Houston are still flooded today. Traffic is a right now. It's still bad. It's really bad right now.
Didn't some of the bios just start to get below their record flood levels?
Yeah. And it's going to cost over $100 billion in damages to restore the city to what it was before the storm. That's And like some people, like they're going to be displaced from their home. This water got to the foundation of their home, got in their carpets, got in their walls, got, you know, some of their valuables. Like people were forced to go to their roofs because their house was uninhabitable, which was insane to me. Like that's how bad the flooding got. Like it wasn't just chest high. Like they could no longer be on the second floor of their home anymore. They went to the roof. They went straight to the roof because they just were stranded. They were waiting for evacuees. It was the worst disaster since Katrina in the United States. And it was, I mean, like it's bad that it happened. It's even harder to see it happen to an area that you're so close to. Right. And, you know, I just want to wish our thoughts and prayers to everybody in the city of Houston who's still recovering. You can donate to the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Houston Food Bank's a really great place to spend to donate your money. If you feel a responsibility to, George R. Brown is still taking volunteers. They were high on volunteers like last week, but they're running low now. Don't let that, you know, be a temporary thing. Like if you want to donate, the best times are to donate like 2, 3, sometimes 4 weeks after the storm, because these places are still going to need help. It's going to be a long recovery process for the city of Houston. 40,000 people were displaced from their homes.
I don't even know what to say about it. It's one of the most unexpected and terrifying things. Obviously, I'm from Houston too. I have tons of people down there. Thankfully, none of them were particularly impacted by it. But yeah, everybody in Houston came together in an amazing way, and our love, I think, is well placed.
Yeah, it was a really incredible experience, and it was just, I still can't get the images out of my head. I'm kind of tired of watching the news because it's gut wrenching, right? To see so many people displaced from their homes, so much damages. It's like Houston's a strong city, so I'm 100% optimistic that we're gonna recover and be fine a year from now. And this is certainly gonna take a while. It's not gonna be easy. Anybody who says it's gonna be easy, they're lying. They have no idea how long this is gonna take. And it makes matters worse. There's two hurricanes that might potentially impact the United States within the next 10 days, which is, that's tough, right? That's tough. It's with Irma potentially hitting Puerto Rico in the coming days and Miami, Florida. I mean, it's going to be bad. And like, it's just tough to watch. It's really tough to watch.
Yeah, and these are things that are way more important than anything else we're going to talk about. So this is definitely a thing we need to talk right now. That yeah, this is real. This is impacts millions of people, and it's going to keep impacting millions of people throughout this hurricane season and future hurricane season. So
yeah,
we just have to keep sticking together and try to make the next time more prepared for it. So I don't know what else to do about it other than to say that I love everybody in Houston. I love the city. I love everyone who's being hurt by this, and everyone needs to do everything they can. Number one thing, if you know somebody who's been affected by this, help them out directly. Direct help is always the best.
Yeah, 100%. Our thoughts are with you, Houston. Houston strong, man. Houston strong. We're going to be fine. This city is too damn resilient to fall down after something like this. And like, I'm optimistic. This city is going to be fine. This city is going to be fine because the people of the city are not going to let anything happen to it. And yeah, let's go ahead and move on to more positive subjects. Les Alexander finally sold the team after only 2 months, which was really shocking to me. Less than 2 months, finding a seller in Tillman Fertitta, owner of the Landry Restaurants and the Golden Nugget in Vegas, network of $3.5 billion. And it's, you know, this guy's been trying to buy a team for a long time. He had an $81 million bid for the Houston Rockets in 93, and Les beat him out by $4 million. And Les certainly cashed out, man. Like $2.2 billion was the final number that we saw. That's 16 times the investment, I think. I think I read that. It was 16 times the investment that Les initially put into this. One of the greatest owners in the history of this town, I can certainly say that. and probably one of the best owners in sports. It's going to be – these are big shoes for Tillman Fertitta to fill. This is no small standard to fill. Like, Les was incredibly impactful on the organization, not only from a basketball standpoint, but off the court. I mean, we mentioned his charitable efforts to Hurricane Harvey, but, I mean, it's not even just Harvey. He's always been an incredibly charitable guy. These are huge shoes to fill. And I'm going to ask you, what were you more shocked by, the dollar amount or the sheer time it took to get this done? Like, because it was pretty quick, really, really quick. I didn't
expect... The speed, honestly. The dollar amount is actually didn't surprise me at all. That's what the Clippers sold for. Everyone's kind of expecting something in the $2 billion range. The Rockets are one of the most valuable franchises out there. Anybody who didn't think that they were one of the most valuable franchises was not paying attention, I guess. Like, yeah, the Clippers sold for a lot, but it was a few years ago. Valuations have still been rising. And I think this Rockets team right now is in a better position than the Clippers were when they got sold. So, which is pretty wild to say, that because the Clippers were in a pretty good position at that point. But it's an extremely good team. All the things we talked about before that they did to set themselves up for long-term success clearly were, if anything, an enticement to buy. So I didn't think it would get done so quickly. I thought they would kind of spend most of this season looking into it. But I guess if you're going to do it, best to do it during the summer so it's not a cloud hanging over the season.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. I thought this thing would take like 6 months to a year to get done. I mean, because ownership sales are no small thing. I think the hiring of Mike D'Antoni took longer than this. I mean, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, that's how quickly this thing got done. And Fertitta was someone that was rumored to buy the team as soon as it went on sale. I mean, so we had strong suspicions that he would be a part of this. And he was a sole owner, which was the biggest surprise to me. Spent 77% of his net worth on this team. That's a lot of money.
Well, he still has a lot left over.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that, Steve Ballmer spent 9% of his net worth on the Clippers, and Fertitta spent 77%, which is incredible. That's an incredible investment, man. I mean, this guy clearly wanted to buy a team. Again, he's been rumored to want to buy a local team for the longest time. He was wanted to buy the Rockets in '93. Was a part owner of the Texans till 2008. This is a guy that's been grooming himself to buy a team for the longest time. I think that's the best way to put it. He's wanted this for the longest time, much like Steve Ballmer was. Steve Ballmer was also a guy who was interested in buying an NBA team for the longest time. I think one big positive to come with this is a Houston native. This is a guy from the Galveston area, grew up here, and basically he cares a lot about this area. He cares a lot about this region. He's very invested in it. He obviously has the Landry restaurants down here. He obviously has a lot of business down here. The University of Houston is no secret, his involvement in the athletics and the university as a whole. He's involved greatly from top to bottom at the University of Houston, and that certainly brings a lot of, I think that more than stops talk of the Rockets moving now. I think it's pretty safe to say that the Rockets aren't going to be moving for the foreseeable future. Like, it's going to be a Houston franchise for as long as Fertitta wants to keep the team.
Yeah, I mean, it was never a real concern, but now it's a zero concern.
Right.
And so now we just have to now we have to figure out what sort of owner he's going to be. I mean, obviously he's going to want the team to be the best it can possibly be, but that's kind of true for every owner except for maybe the occasional Donald Sterling.
Right. And he certainly invested in it, right? 77% of his net worth. I mean, this guy wanted badly to buy a team, and you know, he got it done. So, I mean, I guess that's encouraging. I think the real questions going forward is, how much does Tillman rock the boat, right? Like, is he going to keep management in place? Is he going to be willing to spend? Is he going to be willing to give Chris Paul next season a lucrative contract? You know, stuff like that. That's what we have in the immediate future to worry about Tillman Fertitta. I think the management place is pretty safe. The management team is pretty safe because, I mean, Daryl got an extension this summer, and it seems like Les baby-proofed the hell out of this organization before he sold it. Like, he gave James Harden an extension, Daryl Morey an extension, and he acquired Chris Paul. I mean, this franchise is really set up well to be a dominant team going forward.
Yeah, and the hope also has got to be that this is a guy who's willing to be in the background to allow the team to largely run as it has and not need to have his face and name in the in newspapers. That's really what you want from an owner, someone who puts a team first. And so hopefully his record with Landry's will suggest that, you know, it's not him that he wants to be known most of all for his companies.
And from all indications, he's a really... I know he's on this this TV show for MSNBC or something like that, like a Billion Dollar Buyer. No, CNBC, I'm sorry. I get that, but he's really, like, when you look at his interviews, he's a really soft-spoken guy. Doesn't seem to be too prideful of things. I mean, he just you know, does his business and is really involved in the community, donated $1 million to the Hurricane Harvey relief effort. He's invested in the region, and I we won't know what kind of owner Fertitta is for not even, like, we're not going to know this year. We're not going to know next year. For owners, you really have, it's really like a 5 to 10 year period to where you can truly evaluate an owner. Because for players, you can evaluate how good they can impact a team in sometimes 2 or 3 weeks, you know, maybe a couple months. For coaches, you know, 2 or 3 years. I mean, for general managers, about 5 years is where you can really get a good idea of how good a general manager is. Owners, it's like 10 to 20 years.
It takes a while to figure it out.
Yeah, like, for example, like, I'm not sure, I'm not really sure if Mikhail Prokhorov's a good owner or not. Like, do we blame the Billy King era on him, or do we now give him credit for what Sean Marks is doing down there? Like, see, I'm not sure, right? Like, because he's owned the team for such a short amount of time, it really takes a long period of time to really understand how he operates, you know what I mean? And I'm gonna dispute something you said earlier. I don't think Les was, you know, not involved in the Rockets. He certainly was. I think he was pretty hands on. He asked all the questions, all the tough questions to the Rockets and the management team, and he was very involved in all their decision making. He was at a lot of the press conferences. I don't think the Rockets necessarily need an owner like that, but I mean, someone who's in the background doing all those things is what I think the Rockets need. Like, somebody who's willing to spend and someone who doesn't care about getting the credit for everything and isn't prideful and, you know, like, doesn't need to get his guys in there, right? Because that's a big concern for me. Yeah. Like, does he want to bring in his own management team? Does he want to bring in his own CEO? You know, like, is Tad Brown going to be there? Is Daryl Morey going to be there? Is, you know, is Mike D'Antoni secure right now? Like that's my biggest concern for the immediate future. I think they're fine, but again, we have no idea, right? Like we have absolutely no idea. Les gave him gave Fertitta his seal of approval, which is comforting, and Tad Brown oversaw the sale. But, you know, again, we have to, it's going to take a long time to truly evaluate an owner. It takes, again, sometimes a decade to really know how good an owner is, how much he's willing to spend, how much time he wants to devote to his organization. It's going to take a long time.
The only way you get a good idea about an owner early on is if they do a really bad job. So hopefully it doesn't happen. Hopefully the team just runs how it's running for the time being, and we're not sure for a while.
Yeah, and again, I'd argue that Mikhail Prokhorov did a really bad job to start off, and now he's doing great things. So I'm not sure, right? Like, I really think it takes like at least 5 to 10 years, like, because like even sometimes early on, owners misstep, and you know they try to bring in their own guys and they try to do things a certain way, and then they realize how the NBA is. Like, this isn't like your child's basketball AAU team, right? Like, this is an NBA franchise. You can't run it like you run your other businesses, right? And sometimes a lot of owners find out the hard way that what they've been doing is the wrong way. Like the Kings, I think Vivek Ranadivek is finding this out the hard way. You know, like, you can't run this like your daughter's AAU team. I'm sorry, you can't run an NBA team like that. You can't run this like your other businesses. They're forced to bring in a lot of NBA guys for that front office. I don't think the same thing is going to happen here, because again, Les put in a lot of stuff to make sure nothing happens. Like he babe-proofed the hell out of this organization.
Yep, they're in a really good position going forward. As long as he doesn't try to change up too much stuff, as long as he lets things run, and as I said, hopefully he's the kind of guy who does not put his ego so ahead of everything else that he needs to bring in his whole new team just to make an impression early on, that things should be basically fine. And they'll have a whole, at least a whole season to kind of get used to it. So I'm cautiously optimistic is the way I'll put it.
Right. And like, he has some big decisions going forward. The Rockets have the eighth highest payroll in the NBA. Chris Paul, again, coming up on his on free agency, and he's going to demand a max contract, you got to imagine. And the team's going to have to spend a lot of money to stay competitive with teams like the Warriors, which Les and Daryl were really dead set on. Like, they wanted to compete with the Warriors. And I'm pretty sure Fertitta feels the same way. But I mean, we have no idea. We have no idea. Maybe he pulls the curtain on everything and he decides to tank and dodge the Warriors, right? Like, we have no idea what Fertitta is going to do, and we may not know for another 4 or 5 years. And I think your organization's fine for the time being, but this really rocked the boat. Like, we always talk a lot about organizational stability from top to bottom, right? And it really felt like the Rockets achieved that early on this summer. You had an owner that was invested in winning and competing for the time being, is willing to pay, and was happy with the front office and coaching staff enough to extend them for long contracts. You had a general manager who was forward thinking and among the best in the league, and you had a coach that aligned with everything your organization wanted, and was aligned most importantly with a star player. Now I don't want to say it's totally different now, right? Because again, Fertitta may have similar ideals to Leslie Alexander. They've known each other for over 24 years, which is encouraging. And I believe Fertitta was an advisor to the team in the 90s. I if I'm not mistaken, I got to check that. But he was involved with the Rockets early on, in some capacity. So it's possible that he's much like Les. But we won't know again 5-10 years.
Yep, as long as we don't know soon.
Yeah. So I mean, like, for the immediate future, how do you feel about this team going into next season? Do you think ownership's really going to impact the way we view the Rockets this season?
I don't know that it's going to be a huge impact this season. It better not be. If it is, it's a big problem. As we've discussed, everything's kind of future-proof for the time being. They just have to kind of let Morey and friends do what they're going to do, and it should work out pretty well. I'm actually kind of high on this team, so with any tiny modicum of luck, as long as Fertitta like has any sense at all, he'll just let them do what they're already doing, and I think it's going to be very good. And if he does that, also, it would, if anything, lead him to believe that he should keep doing that. The better the team does configured in its current situation, the more likely Fertitta will be to trust the current situation and let it be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much else to say on this. Let's go ahead and talk about NBA over-unders, the Rockets particularly. The Rockets have the second highest over-under in the NBA right now at 55.5 wins. How do you feel about that number?
I wouldn't touch it because I think it's fairly close.
No, I'm with you. I think that's a stay away because and a lot of people will be surprised by that. You get Chris Paul, you add a deep bench in PJ Tucker, Luke Mbamute, Tariq Black, and you retain a lot of your guys. Like, how could it not be a home run, like 60-win team? Well, they're going to struggle a lot early on, I think. It's not going to be a walk in the park to assimilate Chris Paul into the fold. Chris Paul is a major, major piece. He's going to impact the offense greatly and the defense. They're going to have to figure out a lot of things on the fly. Half of their team got overhauled this season, if you think about it. Because, that Chris Paul trade, Montrezl Harrell went out, Sam Decker went out, Patrick Beverley went out, Lou Williams went out. That's four players that were getting significant playing time for the Rockets that aren't on the team anymore. So this team is going to be totally different from an aesthetic standpoint. And they lost one of their core players in Patrick Beverley. Granted, they upgraded significantly at that position with Chris Paul. But it's going to they're going to lose a lot of stupid games in the beginning. That's how it is with most superstar combos when they decide to team up. They're going to lose a lot of dumb games, a lot of frustrating games.
They'll lose games to Kings and such.
Yeah. And they're going to lose a lot of close games, right? Teams they should be blowing out. And it could be rocky early on. By the All-Star break, I think they should be able to smooth it out. But that's enough to sway me away from... even looking at this over-under, 55.5 wins is just way too high. I do think it's possible that the Rockets are one win better than they were last year. It's possible that the Rockets are, from a talent standpoint, it could be possible that they're like a 61-point differential with like a 54-win total, right? Like, it's possible that happens, right? It's possible that they lose a lot of dumb games that they shouldn't have lost, and that... they're really a lot better, and this is a postseason team. I think that's what's important for going into this season. They got better for the postseason. For the immediate regular season, it's possible that they took a half step back to take a giant step forward in the postseason, right? And that's what's important here, because Chris Paul dramatically improves your postseason potential, but in the short term, I think your offense takes a step back because you're integrating a huge piece, and I think your defense takes... a tiny step back initially, and I think they're going to take a huge leap later on. But initially, I think they're going to struggle.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Thankfully, they have a pretty soft schedule early on, so things might get pretty all right. But yeah, I think that's exactly where I'm at, that they're going to have to figure themselves out. They're also going to have to give themselves some rest at the end of the season. So they're going to lose a lot of games they ought to win, but they also are going to win a lot of games in general. So I think second best team in the league is probably about right. I think that's probably about the number of wins they'll probably get at the end of the season. But how exactly it shakes out is unclear. So yeah, stay away. Don't gamble, especially don't gamble on that line.
Yeah, it's too high. And it's possible teams like the Spurs and such might get more wins than the Rockets in the regular season, and the Rockets end up being like a third seed. With the Rockets having a higher postseason potential, right? Like that's very much on the table. It's also possible that, as you mentioned, that the Rockets rest. Like, I think that's a huge possibility. Like, ending the season this year, Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni had a press conference where they talked about potentially giving Harden some time off, pulling his minutes back even more, which was eye opening, because they pulled his minutes back 2 minutes per game this season, I don't think a lot of people noticed, but yeah, Mike Harden, the reliance on Harden was a lot less this year. Thankfully, Mike D'Antoni pulled it back from where it was in 2015-16. And if that goes back to 34 minutes per game, and if Harden's sitting out games at the end of the season on back-to-backs or whatever, and the Rockets feel like they don't need to win these games, or like the Warriors are way ahead of them later on the season, so they're not going to catch up anyway, so why not rest? Like, that's on the table. That's very much on the table. I think resting is a big possibility for this team, which is another reason I would stay away from this line.
Yep. But it's going to be a good team and a good year.
Yeah, it's going to, again, like, I think this has, like, this team has the potential to win even 60 plus games. But like, I would not bet on it at all. I think they have that kind of talent, but I don't think they're gonna achieve that kind of record. Like, when we eventually do our regular season preview for the Rockets, I'm gonna have them somewhere around the mid 50 range for total win totals, and I think that's a pretty solid bet to stay away from. Over unders How do you feel about them being the second best team in the league? Like, do you think they're at that level? Like, do you think we can say with a surety that they're going to be the second best team in the league next year?
Not that assuredly. I think they're probably that, but you know, it depends on what happens with obviously teams like San Antonio, teams like Boston, teams like Oklahoma City. Though honestly, I don't think Oklahoma City is as close as everyone else does. But teams like that are going to be pretty close there. And the Cavs, of course, you never know. The Cavs are a team who always are amazing when it comes to the playoffs, but pretty much always slump in the regular season. So we shall see. I think they're the most likely to be a second-best team in the league. I don't see anybody being ahead of them for that. So
that's a good way to put it. The most likely to be the second-best team in the league is the way I would phrase it, too. And a lot of this is because we have no idea how these new structured teams are going to be. A lot of teams look really different this year. Like, really different. This offseason was nuts. One of the craziest offseasons I've ever witnessed.
It may not be over.
Yeah. One of the craziest offseasons I've ever witnessed in my entire life. We might not see another offseason like this for another 5 years. Like, that's how crazy this offseason. Like, I think next offseason might some people might consider next offseason boring because of how incredibly exciting this offseason was.
I'm sure something insane will happen that time too.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron's a free agent, so that's always interesting. But I mean, in comparison, the amount of star power that shifted teams this year. I mean, Paul Millsap, Paul George, Chris Paul, a lot of Pauls. Gordon Hayward, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, a lot of stars shifted teams, and the league looks entirely different. I think the Boston line was really, really high coming out of gates. 56.5 is something. I don't think Boston's going to be as good as Vegas thinks they're going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why they dropped their line a little bit. They were actually like a game ahead of the Rockets until, I guess, news about I don't know what something happened that dropped their line by a couple of games.
I think it's when they saw where the money was going, that's when they really dropped the line. I mean, like, that's a really solid under bet. I would take 56.5 games. Yeah. I feel pretty comfortable taking the under on that, considering they're bringing in two major new pieces, and I don't think they're that good. I mean, I don't think they're like a title contender this year, and winning over 56.5 games means you're a title contender next year. And that's something I would stay away from. I think their line is still too high. I think it's like 54.5 or something like that. That's still too uncomfortable for my liking. I think the way you said it earlier was right. I feel comfortable in this team being the most likely to be the second best team in the NBA next year, possibly the second. I mean, also the second best team in the West. I think that's about it. I mean, this is as good of a podcast we could have done in September, right?
Things actually happened.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long time till we podcast again. It's possibly, if something happens with Melo, we might be on here, but I honestly don't think anything's gonna happen until the trade deadline. I don't think Melo's
the trade deadline 2020.
Yeah, it's looking pretty bleak there in New York. And the Rockets are in no position to rush things. They're in an awesome position, as we mentioned throughout this podcast. They're in an awesome position going into next year, and I don't think they're in any position to rush a Carmelo Anthony trade or go all in on something that may not work, right? I think they're fine. We talked about as much as we could up until right now. And yeah, guys, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good rating on iTunes if you enjoy the podcast. Give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Write something nice or write something mean and give us 5 stars. It doesn't really matter. It's still going to help us. And yeah, guys, good night.